Hello, and welcome back to the History of Australia podcast. As always, before we start, I do want to acknowledge that this podcast is being produced on traditional Kaurna land, and recognise the Kaurna people as the custodians of the Adelaide region. I also pay my respects to Kaurna elders past, present, and future. This minisode, we'll be discussing perhaps a small, but rather interesting section of Australia's history, that being Norfolk Island and its many convict mutinies or rebellions. The small island has come up in the past throughout the podcast, initially as a not insignificant part of colonisation under Governor Phillip and his interim successor Francis Gross. But it has, both due to time and circumstance, slid into the background of Australia's colonial history. The convict mutinies and rebellions which we discuss today are, while only relevant physically to the island itself, a good demonstration of how convicts were treated throughout Australia's colonies, and of how the convict colonial experiment was not destined to turn into the Australia we know. While I have discussed Norfolk Island's colonisation in earlier episodes, I will briefly summarise it here to provide a background for the rest of the episode. Even prior to the arrival of the First Fleet, officials and colonial figures back in England had argued for the colonisation of the island, though how serious these arguments were is hard to decipher. Nonetheless, Governor Phillip was given orders to colonise the island due to, in particular, the banning of Russian hemp exports by Empress Catherine the Great. And from early 1788, the island was inhabited by Europeans, mostly convicts and soldiers. While some issues would appear during this period, including a near mutiny of the New South Wales Corps of Members against Philip King, then in charge of the island, no convict uprisings would occur before the decision to abandon the island was made in 1813. The last inhabitants of the islands would leave then, destroying all buildings and killing all stock they could find prior to evacuating, as to ensure that no other European power could colonise the island. Now, it is worth noting that both here and in its second period of colonisation, Norfolk Island was, at least officially, treated as a site of secondary punishment. Convicts who had, in some way, committed a crime in Australia while still under their terms of the original convictions, were often sent here if they weren't executed. Though, this was not the case for all of the convict inhabitants. With this thinking in mind, the island was to be recolonised in 1824, and this is where the first convict mutinies began. The first of these would be in September 1826, ostensibly under the motivation of a convict escape. The mutiny would occur on the 25th, when two convicts would escape into the wilderness of the island, chased by multiple soldiers. This escape attempt would turn out to be a decoy, as ringleaders Black John Gough, William Moore, and Edward Watson, alongside at least 50 other convicts, would rise up against their overseers. Using their numerical majority, they would bound these overseers, and from there, a group of them would head into the small town on the island, picking up farming tools from the storehouse, before using them to overwhelm the guardhouse, and apparently steal arms and ammunition. They would also bound the civil officials on the island during this time. The convicts would then go over to assault the garrison, but instead engage with soldiers at the island's hospital on the way. This is where the only fatality of the mutiny, Lance Corporal Robert Wilson, would occur. As the fighting was ongoing near the hospital, Wilson would be shot by an unknown convict, wielding a pistol, before being bayoneted to death by Moore. Two other soldiers would be wounded, while the rest would retreat back to the garrison. The ringleaders, aware that the soldiers would alert the rest of the garrison, hurried themselves and the rest of the convicts onto boats, using them to escape the island. As they escaped, the garrison did shoot at them, but to no effect. However, the convicts would only reach Phillip Island, an even smaller piece of land only 4 kilometers away from Norfolk Island. Determined to recapture the convicts, Commandant Vance Young Donaldson would take a boat and a group of soldiers and pursue them within 48 hours. While all the soldiers were armed, their attempt to ambush the convicts by reaching the island at night failed when wind and waves meant they did not arrive until dawn, allowing the convicts on the island to fire at the boat from its cliffs. Despite this, Donaldson did manage to land his soldiers and advance through the island, killing at least 2 convicts and taking over 11 prisoner. Weirdly enough, this may be the first successful contested amphibious assault ever achieved in Australia's colonial history. Donaldson would return to the island on the 29th, sending 2 of the captured convicts over with a message for those remaining on the island to surrender, as it would not only save much trouble, but probably prevent some of them being shot, which is just quite hilarious wording. The convicts apparently responded in kind, stating that they would consider of it. Seemingly not in a patient mood, Donaldson would once again land on the island and capture 10 convicts alongside many of the firearms they took, leaving the rest on the island to gradually be recaptured. Eventually, Gough, Moore, and Watson alongside the rest would be captured, though some managed to escape for over half a year. The 3 ringleaders would eventually be hung for their mutiny. While this incident continued to play out to its end, the second mutiny of sorts would begin on the 21st of December, 1826. On the way to transporting 66 convicts to the island, the ship the Wellington would be seized by these convicts. Despite attempting to fight, the around 20 crew and soldiers could not resist the convicts' seizure, and would be captured and kept aboard the ship by the convicts. These mutineers, led apparently by a Walton, a Douglas, and a Flashjack Edwards, would attempt to sail the ship. However, they would soon ask for assistance from the captured crew, who would initially refuse. However, when it became clear that they were all at risk of sinking, or just sailing aimlessly forever, the actual captain relented and allowed his men to assist. They would then sail the ship to the Bay of Islands on the coast of New Zealand, where they would soon be met by a whaler ship led by Captain Duke. The whaler, alongside another ship led by Captain Clark, seemingly fired on the Wellington, forcing the convicts to eventually surrender. 2 would die in the fighting, while Walton and 4 others were executed, though around 23 had been sentenced to hanging for their crimes and received a leeway for their gentle treatment of the crew. This period of uprisings would be closed by a short one in October 1827, where in it, an attempt against Commandant Thompson Wright's life would be made by convict Patrick Clinch. Clinch would be arrested and then executed, though Wright would later be charged with ordering the murder of Clinch prior to the uprising, though he was ultimately acquitted of this charge. The next uprising would be in June 1830, though this too would be another small one. 11 convicts would steal a newly constructed whaleboat from the colony and use it to escape to Phillip Island, where they would coincidentally find a visiting botanist, a man by the name of Mr. Cunningham. They would rob him of his possessions while they were there. The commander of Norfolk, a Lieutenant Burrough, attempted to go after the convicts, but initially failed due to rough seas. Though eventually, when the island was reached, there was no sign of these convicts. These mutineers, nor their boat, would ever appear again. And it is believed that they took off from Phillip Island, and eventually drowned due to rough seas. Though, this will likely never be proven. After this, there was the 1834 rebellion. However, we've already discussed that at length in episode 36. So I'll point your attention there, as I would like to leave some breathing room for the last two uprisings. Those being a relatively minor one in 1842, and one in 1846, known by the fun name of the Cooking Pot Uprising. The first one, occurring in June 1842, is a bit scarce on details, but it seems to involve some convicts taking over the ship, the Governor Phillip, before soldiers below deck fought back, leading to 5 dead convicts and 1 dead soldier, as well as 4 convicts eventually hung. It seems likely that this one was planned in a similar vein to the 1826 mutiny which captured the Wellington, but I cannot be certain. The second, known as the Cooking Pot Uprising, would occur in July 1846. To understand how it started and got that name, we have to look back at Major Child's taking command of the colony in 1844, succeeding Captain Maconochie. Maconochie had been a more lenient commander of the island than pretty much any before him, presenting the convicts with more freedoms and comforts than previously. Most importantly for us, Maconochie allowed them to both make their own gardens and own cooking utensils, pots and pans to cook their food with. Childs, over the next 2 years of his command, would roll back these freedoms, increasing working hours and removing the ability for convicts to have their own garden. He would then, in June, declare that all cooking utensils and materials owned by convicts must be handed in to the soldiers on the island, and that all convicts would have to eat at the island's general cookhouse. This created considerable tension, increased significantly by the events of the 30th of June. Here, the superintendent of convicts, William Foster, would order that all cooking items owned by convicts in the lumberyard were to be confiscated by soldiers. This made those increased tensions enter a boiling point. These would spill over on the 1st of July, 1846. When the convicts were assembled in the lumberyard, they apparently began agitating and complaining, especially to Patrick Kinney, the assistant superintendent. He would go to the overseer there and explain that trouble was likely, but no measures were seemingly taken. Leaving, he would then talk to former Van Diemen's Land bushranger William Westwood, only for them to be interrupted by a group of convicts storming the barrack store and taking back their cooking utensils. Despite this clear tension, no actual conflict occurred. Instead, the convicts apparently just began to cook their meals, while Hinney went to the other overseers and told them to prepare to move the convicts to their respective workstations. This weirdly calm moment would be shattered as convicts, led by Westwood, grabbed axes and other equipment and stormed the gate out of the lumberyard, with Westwood killing Constable John Morris on the way out. This group of convicts would also murder Stephen Smith as they broke through the cookhouse. Around 60 convicts in total followed Westwood out of the lumber yard, moving to kill more constables, including John Dinnan and Thomas Saxton, before preparing to kill Samuel the Christ Killer Barrow, who was apparently nicknamed this due to his seemingly abhorrent treatment of the convicts. However, the military on the island had arrived by this point, around 20 men led by Captain Conran. Westwood and the rebellious convicts would run back to the lumber yard where the other convicts were, maybe looking to swell their numbers. But the arrival of the soldiers there stopped any further violence, with Westwood and the others being arrested. Issues appeared with trying to hold all 60 convicts, leading to them all being held in chains in a boat shed, which was seen even then, even by the people on the island, as inhumane. In the end, 13 convicts, including Westwood, were executed, making the total deaths here 13 convict and 4 soldier. These multiple Norfolk Island mutinies are interesting both for their continents, but also what they tell us about the place. The island was a distant area of the Australian colonies. And even as late as the 1840s, the social landscape of the island seemed far more in line with New South Wales in the 1790s than any of the colonies at that point. These mutinies were often caused by the brutal treatment of convicts on the island, though that isn't to say the convicts themselves weren't blameless, just that it does mean that compared to convicts anywhere else in Australia, that their conditions were far worse. This didn't last long after the Cooking Pot Uprising though, as by 1847, the Colonial Office had begun to decide that Norfolk Island should be abandoned once more. With transportation ended in New South Wales, and ending in Van Diemen's Land, the island no longer made sense for its intended purpose. And by 1855, the last convicts would be removed from the colony. It would be colonized one more time, for a permanent period, by the descendants of those mutineers from the Bounty who came from Pitcairn Island. But that is a story for another day. Next week, we'll be discussing the new levels of democracy across Australia in the middle 1840s, as well as the ongoing fight between the governors and squatters, alongside a few other things. Will the Crown finally regain control over the land it claims its own? Or will the squatters, as rich and as powerful as many of them are, push the colonial governments to desperate measures?